Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Broadcasting from New Zealand, the fabulous, the fluoridated, the Fukushima irradiated. Well, we don't know how Fukushima irradiates us because we stopped testing for radiation, incidentally, last year. At the end of last year, probably when radiation level tests were trying to spike or anything. I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen, but I live life with my eyes open. And it means that I see a lot of things that really, really frustrate me. Kind of make me angry.
Make me go to dark places.
You know, I don't know if anybody else is vibing what I'm selling here. Because I wake up in the morning and I'm really angry. Angry at everything. And it seems like there's no reason for it. And I remember, you know, actually there is a reason for it. In fact, there's not just one. It's not just two. And there's a reason to be angry for everything. Isn't that interesting, right? It's a motivation thing. If you're not angry, you're not motivated to change the things that are going on that are frustrating you. There's a reason why you get angry. It's because you generally destroy things that make you angry. You change them in some way, perhaps, a little bit more peacefully than destroying them. And what's happening to me, I think, is I'm starting to lose my cool. You know, all of this joking and carrying on and playing around like, yeah, it's the lighter side of genocide, ha ha ha, don't laugh, you'll cry. Yeah, basically it's just I don't know if you've noticed, I'm not, and I won't deny it if somebody accuses me of it, but it's basically just a thin veneer to cover up enormous amounts of rage that courses just beneath the arteries and the cockles of the heart. Right underneath the surface there. Very, very in touch with my rage places, ladies and gentlemen. I'm getting angrier and angrier. Day after frickin' day. For inexplicable reasons. But because I've got my eyes open. I'm looking at all the things around me. I'm hearing what people are saying. I'm watching what people are doing. In a lot of cases, I'm not. Kind of like in a bit of a black hole, right? Because as soon as you say, oh, I've got my eyes open, somebody will just knock you right on your ass and say, really, have you heard about this? And you're like, no, I have no idea. Which frustrates you even more, you know? You get angry about messages from people that are just abusive, just stupid, People are always wrestling with their egos and everything. I'm narcissistic as hell, but mate, I don't even let my ego get in the way of having a decent relationship with somebody. I mean, you know, let's be peaceable about it. Let's be cool. Let's not be horrific and nasty and make stuff up. Let's not call each other names. Let's try to, you know, be human, gentlemanly, reasonable, etc. Whatever frickin' adjective you think you need to say. Whether it be religious monocles or monocles. It's a singular eyeglass. How did that even come into that? Maybe I meant monologue. A religious monologue. Is that comforting? I don't think so. But apparently a whole lot of people spend a lot of time in churches listening to things. And believe me when I tell you, you carry your church with you. Whatever you're sitting there listening to all day and everything, that's your preacher. That's your representation of the world and your God out there. And, you know, if you're sitting there listening to somebody raging out and getting really aggressive and everything of that nature, hey, oh my God, everything's so fracked up, it's horrible, it's terrible. And you look outside and it's like, there's nothing going on, right? And all this fear and all this angst and everything is starting to build up. Every single movie you watch is violent, or it's got zombies, or the end of the world, or somebody freaking being murdered by their closest sibling, or anything like that. It's like they're trying to squeeze the love and togetherness and the happy feelings of wonder and consciousness and everything out of everybody's lives in every single way, every single day, bombarding us with the radiation and goodness knows what freaking other chemicals and everything. You know, and you get people who get born and they've got like traces of 200 freaking plus chemicals in the cords, you know. It's just unbelievable. We're totally saturated in things that are bad for our health. Even those of us who know what is bad for our health really know and know about the GMOs to stay away from and the flora and everything like that. Half of us are really unhealthy ourselves, you know, and it's because there's like this massive quantity of knowledge that we haven't even had time to absorb yet. Because when you're reading stuff, you don't even understand it. When you're interviewing people, you don't freaking understand it. You haven't deeply researched into it. You haven't read it over 100 times. You haven't had 10 conversations with 12 different people with different points of views and differing opinions and evidence stacks and things of that nature in order to compound a point of view. People, we are running on frickin' autopilot most of the time. I know I am. I have no idea what the hell is going on. I'm prepared to admit it. And a whole bunch of other people are not prepared to admit they don't know what the hell is going on. Are you prepared to admit it yourself? You know, that there's so much going on that at the end of the day, no matter how good an idea you have and a handle on things, you really have no freaking idea because there's just that much knowledge. And all you can do, really, the only thing I can actually feel confident about is things that I've already done and things that I reckon I can probably easily do. You know, if I'm doing radio shows and videos and ranting, etc., or whatever, you know, it's like, no problem, man. I can do that. I can do that. And somebody says, you know, Vinny, you could be an Olympic gymnast. And I'd be like, you know, I'm not prepared. Sadly, I don't think any of us are prepared, really, to change our lives again, all right? Because I think maybe this is sort of like a 29-year-old midlife crisis kind of episode going on in my brain right now because I'm so freaking pissed off that I just think, you know, maybe I am having a little bit of a midlife crisis. Maybe I'm going crazy because I'm thinking about how much of a pain in the ass that it is to actually be surviving, helping humanity, getting all the praise and thanks and being able to travel around and interview people and talk about all this interesting stuff and what have you and actually really contribute something to the broad base of humanity. And how could that possibly be a bad thing? Here's why. Because everybody who doesn't have the same objective as you comes after you and starts abusing you and starts giving you all their negativity and all their negative energy, all their questioning, all their ninnying, and you become really judgmental. Really judgmental if you've got so many people displaying their opinions of you, is that it's sort of like a defense mechanism, is that as soon as somebody criticizes you, you have to hit them back with the criticism, you know? And this is something I've realized happened a long time ago. is that two people will be arguing. One person will say, you only think this because of such and such and blah, 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 blah in your life, which I know nothing about. And you reply by saying, well, you're only accusing me of that because of such and such and blah, 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 blah in your life, which I know nothing about. So you've got two people who know nothing about each other, telling each other who each other is, and not listening to each other. It's freaking stupid. This is what's happening. We're not freaking listening to each other. I feel like I'm not being listened to. You know, isn't that ironic for a radio show host? It's like, oh, I don't feel like people are listening to me. And it's not in sort of the way like that. It's more on the everyday level. It's like, you're not listening to me. You know, I'm telling you something really important. I'm telling you something that's true. I'm telling you something that could actually help you save your life or something like that if you just put in a little bit of effort. And then, of course, ignoring all the efforts and everything that I could be putting into other areas of my life where I'm falling short. And we all do that, don't we? You know, am I overly critical of myself? Probably. Well, you have to be. You know, if you're a loudmouth piece of crap, from time to time. I'm incredibly selfish. I've stolen things, you know. Gave them back, you know. I realised it didn't belong to a mainstream media person. You know, and I realised, oh my God, I just stole a microphone from an activist. I actually felt real bad about that. It was like this Casper thing. And when you broke ass and everything, and I remember like back in my childhood, I used to like steal money out of my mum's wallet and I used to buy food with it and everything. I got really, really fat as a kid and getting abuse at school all the time. And it was like stealing things became kind of like a stress coping thing or whatever. I'm not sure what the hell actually caused it, but I was prone to like taking things. And I took this thing. It was, I just finished filming this conference about, see, there's a deep confession here. You won't hear any other radio show host freaking confessing this kind of stuff to you. That's why you know you can trust me. Because if I actually do something bad, I'll confess to it. And believe me, I will punish myself for it. You know? Except if you're an authority figure and you're actually going to take my freedom away. Because at the end of the day, I think that I punish myself for the things that I do. And I repair things that I've broken. You know? I really do make an effort. The law should really only come into play when somebody's actually really been dishonest. There's an old saying. You can trust a thief, but you can't trust a liar. So, it was at Casper, I think. This is Lady Maria Bradshaw, wonderful woman. She's like, talking about her son and all of these other people that have lost their children to drugs and bad reactions, suicides, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Nobody else talking about the truth on that issue, certainly not on the media side of things. So, you know, I actually endeavoured quite hard to put that whole 2.5-hour conference as edited up as I could do up on my website. And as I was about to leave, I noticed that there was this microphone there. Now, there were a hell of a lot of mainstream media people there at this conference. And I thought to myself, oh my God, one of these mainstream media scumbags has left his microphone with a little stand and everything. Not like a tall stand or anything, just like one of the tiny little tripod ones that you just pop on a desk, you know? And I was like, man, I'll nick this, yeah. Grabbed it and walked out with it, didn't say nothing to anybody. And then I got it home, and I put it in a box just underneath my desk. I wasn't, like, hiding it or anything. I just had a bad feeling. Like I'd done something wrong. And I refused to use that microphone, which was much better than the microphones I did have. And I think, like, a couple of months later, I get this phone call. And there's this lady on the other end from Casper. Asking, did I know what happened to the microphone that night? And I played it off and I said, yeah, oh my God, yeah. I was hoping somebody would call me about this. I usually kind of was. And I was going to a protest at that point. And so I said, you know, I'll take it in the car with me. And I'll meet you in town and I'll hand the microphone back to you. You know, it's perfectly well preserved. Hasn't been damaged or even used. Just been stored. Stolen. You know? Honestly. I feel freaking ashamed of myself. And I get these flashbacks all the time about bad stuff that I've done, like that, where no actual real harm came into it, but I still feel really, really bad about it. And I get that all the time. It's like a shock to the spine sort of thing. I don't know if you've ever had the sensation where you go, oh, for just sort of randomly. You might have seen other people do it. It's like I really beat up on myself about these things that I've done. Even though I've done, you know, quite a quantitatively large amount of good, it's not all the good things that I remember when I'm by myself and thinking about things, you know? It's always the bad things that happen to me. Has that happened to everybody else as well? I don't know. But I think I'm freaking talking about myself too much, of course, but at the end of the day, I'm still really effed off at the entire system, and at the same time feeling really guilty about things that I've done. And I'm not sure if I'm just like getting in my own way, am I overthinking it, or am I actually going through a reasonable process of analysing my own actions, their implications, their consequences, and then trying to adjust my behaviours accordingly so I don't pull off that kind of BS in the future, you know? Or am I just running myself into the ground by being far too honest, as has happened to me in almost all of my relationships and the rest of my life? If you tell people what you really, really think, especially if you tell them what you really think about them, you no longer have a friend in general. You know, it's a sad but true fact that there's so many people who will literally judge you on one statement, one phrase, and throw everything out the window. It's sort of the same thing that I do to myself. I look at all the good that I've done, all the great things that I've said and helped to elucidate to people and help them to have broader understandings about stuff that they never even conceived of in the first frickin' place through thousands of different conversations with people from all over the world and all over the country. But that's not the thing that I remember. I remember the one time when I did something that I disagree with and then disregard all the rest. It's the exact same thing that happens with listeners. You know, like I said, a week ago we had this big power cut, and of course I went to the organic cafe up the road, and there's a lady in there who recognised me from a Zeitgeist meeting I was at a couple of years ago, and she said, "Oh yeah, Vinny, I don't really listen to your show anymore because you did one show one time and you weren't talking about the benefits of feminism. Like, you know, we're kind of denigrating and having a look at the CIA sponsorship and things of that nature behind the feminism movement, you know, on a factual basis. We're not freaking woman haters. All three of us were married at the time, you know." It's like somebody accusing you of racism or sexism or any or virtually any ism. If they accuse you with some kind of a name, they've lost the argument, in my opinion, because they're not actually arguing. They're just freaking name calling, like it's a schoolyard game. It's a freaking game to these people. I don't want to vibe like that, man. I'm not playing games with you, ladies and gentlemen. There's a reason why I confess all this stuff. It's because it's therapy for me to know that the bad and the good in me is out there freely for people to see in my own words. So if anybody talks trash about me behind my back, I can guarantee you, I've said worse about myself on air. Alright? So in a weird way, I'm protected, because I'm not actually really trying to mess with you or anything like that. I'm just being honest. There is nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. And I'm starting to get a little bit egotistical about it, because there's so many people who criticize me and say it's all about my ego and everything like that. Well, my egotism is a little bit of a part of it, and I'm not going to deny that I have a bit of an ego. It's not the reason I do what I do. Yeah, the reason I'm doing what I do, bro, is because basically I experience great pain and suffering at the hands of the system, Others have suffered much worse. Some have not even lived through their pain and suffering. And I still haven't gotten over mine, and I don't think anybody ever really does. There's learned ways of coping with it. They say build a bridge and get over it, but then they're only telling you that because they haven't frickin' built the bridge and gotten over it themselves. They've just learned to frickin' freeze in the waters of self-pity and just deal with it like a man. You know, what's wrong with people? We're just totally out of touch. We're out of touch with each other. You know, we're all plugged into these smartphones and our computers and everything like that. You've got husbands and wives living in frickin' different parts of their house and everything, and they're like ships in the night. They don't even have a relationship except with their computer and all their friends online that they never meet. They've got no real human contact anymore. So it's just... makes us all feel lost. Makes me feel lost. How many times have I, you know, thought badly of people just in general? You know, like, oh, slaves, friggin' scum. Countless times. You know, you see articles in the paper or anything of people being really stupid or really callous or anything like that. And it concocts a view that basically there's me and the scum. Us and the zombies. That kind of thing. This us versus their mentality. Now, there is an us versus them mentality, but the public aren't... How can I really describe this delicately? The answer is I can't. The public aren't in full control of their own minds, of their own actions, of their own lives. They can't be. They haven't been for quite some time. So, several generations, in fact, of dependency, public education, and brain control, mind washing, and very simple diplomacy has allowed people to basically accept more or less any living condition without question. That's more or less it. Their lives are controlled, and their minds are controlled too. All of us are, to some degree. Not going to lie about that. Some degree, we're all under a little bit of mind control. And if you don't think that you do, you're lying to yourself. Okay, brain ain't got no firewalls. You see an image, boom, you have a mental reaction. Happens to everybody all the time. Anything you see gets decoded and an impression comes up. So there's many, many ways to manipulate your mind. And it really effed off with people who are so frickin' sure of themselves. I mean, come on. You're living on a planet that has infinite quantities of knowledge. Huge, long tracts of history, ancient history, etc. Massive cosmos around you, spions with telescopes, etc. Microscopic organisms. You've got all manner of degrees of study that you could get into that you know nothing about currently. And you think that you know it all. You think that you've heard it all. You think that you know enough so that you don't need to learn anything. Bro, grow up. Your learning experience didn't stop because you stopped going to school. Because there was a summer holiday break or anything like that. This is what I'm talking about. About walking around with your eyes freaking open. Sweet mercy. There are so many things happening. Even me not following the news, just thinking about things that I've seen or editing lectures about electromagnetic frequencies and all these different aspects of our health system that's under attack, and eugenics and depopulation and therapy and the chemtrails and the good and all the truth or infighting and the half truth movement. Everything is just buzzing around in here. It's driving me freaking nuts. It's like a busted open hornet's nest in my brain places. It's not pleasant. It stings and it buzzes with freaking irony. And it's just not funny sometimes. I go nuts. Absolutely mental. I mean, as I said, a very angry person. And I yell and I scream something awful. It's like I throw tantrums. That's how freaking crazy I'm getting. Because I just haven't been letting it out.
effectively. I haven't been honest with myself. I haven't been true enough to myself. I've been given the platform of my show to absolutely everybody else to say whatever the hell they want. And I've been trying to play to everybody's tune and give people, you know, the respect and the coverage that they deserve for all their ideas and things of that nature, to the point where I didn't want to listen to anybody at all anymore. And I just wanted to be angry, you know? Have you ever been in a group of friends or anything, anywhere, and there's a whole bunch of really talkative people who might, like, talk over others on occasion and what have you, and you're sort of like the quiet person in the room, and you try to get a word in here or there, or maybe talk about something a little bit in detail, and you just get interrupted, and you don't really get to say your piece, and it kind of happens again and again throughout the night or something. I'm not sure if you've ever had a night like this. That's kind of like my job, is to sit there and listen to people and get talked over. As a polite radio show host, I mean, you're not supposed to interrupt your guests to talk over them. It's supposed to really be the other way around, in my opinion. But as it turns out, you become a punching bag for everybody else's stresses and complaints and everything, that they now finally have this free platform to talk about in a fairly uncensored general kind of way. And so I'm sitting here and I'm listening to all these people with all of their eclectic problems from hundreds of different fields of studies, with PhDs and doctorates and goodness knows what qualifications. Used to work in the government, local government, corporate private sector, oil industry, CIA, private security forces, mercenaries, assassins and discoverers, scientists, authors, filmmakers, radio show hosts, occult researchers, some of the greatest philosophers and thinkers of our times, researchers into psychological conditions and drugs and war and armaments and absolutely everything. It's like you're overflowing the pot with knowledge sometimes, don't you think? What happens when you shovel down stuff and you don't have the time to chew it? You know? That's kind of what it feels like. You need to take time out to digest or to repeat things back. Speaking of repeating things back, I'm going to take a quick break in a wiki leak. We'll be right back. To the Vinnie Eastwood Show at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. If you give me a moment, I just kind of need to plug my services for a bit. I do need to help people in order to be able to survive, and the relationship is reciprocal. So, if you need coverage of some description, you know, New Zealand or America or Australia or whatever, and you're talking about stuff that the government won't let you say, or the mainstream media won't give you the platform, or anything like that. Anything outside of the mainstream that is true and ain't full of crap, and you've got like a little meeting or somewhere in Auckland, or maybe around the country, or whatever you want to fly me around. I'm not sure about the international travel thing, but you know, that'd be nice. It'd be interesting to trial out and see if I can actually leave the country. See if I'm on Bush's old no-fly list or something, you know. It'd be funny. But yeah, I can help, man. Trust me. I've got cameras, I got a microphone, everything. I might be kind of intrusive when I'm filming your presentations, etc. But I edit myself out afterwards. And comes away with two camera angles and really good sound. So at the end of the day, it's going to be quite nice and easy for everybody involved.
So what I need, really, ladies and gentlemen, is to be invited to things. You know, if you talks, presentations, or political party meetings and things of that nature, you know, just hit me up on Facebook or the contact page on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and invite me. You know, I'll either be able to come or I won't. I won't necessarily charge you for it. It'd be really lovely if I'm filming your conference or something like that, if you're making money out of it, that you can give me, I don't know, $150, $250 or something, you know, bit of a mates rates thing there, whatever. But I will do it for free if you need me to. If you got no money to pay me, no worries, man. You know, it's like a whole weekend's work, putting up hours of presentations, two camera angles and everything. It's a lot of work, but I do it. You know, there's not too many, let's just say there's not too many opportunities for people of an activist budget to get their film, their stuff documented, let alone get it uploaded. There's plenty of people who I've seen over my years of experience in public meetings, protests, political party meetings, etc. Plenty of people who come and film them. Plenty. And there's usually only one out of all those conferences that I've been to. Usually only one. Almost exceptionally be more than one would upload the entirety of a public meeting. Or a big political speech and things like that. I do. That's me. In terms of New Zealand, there's just nobody else. There's nothing egotistical about it. It's a verifiable fact. You go find me somebody anywhere in this country who spends as much hours at it that I do, produces the hours upon hours of content of important information and made freely available to people through YouTube and a website that you don't have to pay for. You know? There's just nobody in this country doing that. It's unfortunate. I'm not saying, you know, nobody does anything. I'm just saying I do it way more than everybody else combined. So compared to me, they're not doing much. And it's not because, you know, they're lazy, etc. I'm not going to make judgments. I don't even know what these people do in their personal lives, if they still have jobs or anything like that. But I went in whole hog, I quit my job, and I started basically going out there and helping people because they needed help. All these activists and everything like that, they don't even know how to use Skype. I'm teaching them now. I just taught Penny Bright, long-time activist. I've known for like 5 years or something like that. How to upload a video to YouTube. Her very first YouTube video with a new YouTube channel and everything like that. You can teach an old public watchdog new tricks. Mm-hmm. These are the things I can do. I can help people. And the way that I want to help people, mostly, is not just doing the job for them. I also want to actually teach you how to do the job for yourself, so that you don't need me anymore. Okay? The objective of my career is to make myself obsolete, and then move on to somewhere else where I can help better humanity. Because I believe that citizen journalism and contributing to the wider public sphere of available knowledge is one of the most important jobs in this frickin' realm of existence. If people don't have appropriate information that is researched, backed up, verified, and not coming from mainstream media sources, I mean, isn't it not self-evident? Everything's falling apart. Coming apart at the freaking seams. It's an extraordinary mess of crap work out there, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm going to assure you that there are meetings and town halls and little conferences and things like that being put on all over the world that barely any of you hear about. All right? Plenty that I don't hear about. But the very small percentage the 1% of, let's say, conferences and things of that nature that are talking about alternative stuff that happens just in my home city of Auckland that I cover will blow your frickin' mind 1,000 times over. So you can imagine what they would be like if there were 1,000 Vinnie Eastwoods in this country, you know, that I've helped just to school them, you know, tell them, don't waste time on that, you know, do this, get your content out. Don't worry about the editing details, because then you'll sit there and you'll have 10 unfinished videos 6 months later. You need that video up now, bro. There was a protest yesterday. Soon as humanly possible, while people are still searching about it. While the people who actually went to the protest will still be looking for videos and things of that nature to come out. It's not that freaking difficult. As long as you quit messing around. Alright, I quit messing around because I realised I had nothing left to live for. Alright, you know, Fukushima, freaking Gulf of Mexico, or the chemtrails, and the EMF wireless radiation, and the fluoride in the water, and the vaccines, and freaking world government plans and everything. We're freaking dead, ladies and gentlemen, we're dead. Alright, so I was like, well, bugger it. If I'm dead anyway, I might as well just make a difference instead of being upset about it. And I might as well help some people who are actually trying to save human life from pain, suffering, fear, and death. It's amazing what we'll do if we're forced into a tight corner. I don't know how to get out of this, though. All right? I'm basically locked in here. I'm a slave to this microphone and this desk. Sometimes it Fs me off, but hey, at the end of the day, this is my sentence. I'm sentenced to help people. Share their pain and their joy, their discoveries and ideas to people who are wise enough to listen through to the end without judgment or a short attention span getting in the way of the truth. That's why these interviews are long form generally. That's why I don't interrupt the guests. Because you can hear my ideas freaking any time. You hear me every show. But for that one show where that one person is coming and, you know, that's their show. And I'm just the friendly douchebag with a microphone. Here to make your stay more enjoyable. Would you like a cup of tea, sir? You know? That kind of thing. I try to make everybody laugh and have a fun time and enjoy their life. While they're learning about themselves being exterminated and enslaved. Okay? There's nothing inherently wrong with that, is there? See? Every single silver lining has a cloud. It's just beautiful. And it's cumulative. Like a cumulus. Or is it a cumulus? I don't know where I'm accumulating the knowledge from. Regardless, I need your support, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, really? Have I not given enough? Have I not proven my worth? Have I not served the community long enough? 5 long years, ladies and gentlemen, I've been supported by your donations and people who are coming on board and basically giving me a donation for advertiser and sponsorship and things of that nature in order to keep this show on the air. Because they believe... No, they don't believe. They know that I will keep putting out information. Not small quantities of it either. Large swollen rivers of information. From people from eclectic fields that you couldn't even name if you had a 2-hour show to just list them. That's what we talk about on this show. And we give that all out to people. Free. You don't have to pay for it. I mean, you got to pay for your internet connection, maybe whatever else. But at the end of the day, you have thousands upon thousands of hours of YouTube videos and radio content with some of the most mind-bending and life-changing stuff you will ever hear in your life. And it's actually fun to listen to. It's actually enjoyable. That's the thing that I notice is very different about when I'm listening to my show versus other people's show. The other shows, they're great and they're profound and they're really powerful and they make me think. and they make me feel enriched, but they also make me stressed, and I feel like drained at the end of them. And I listen to my show, and at the end of it, I don't feel that. I get all the other same reactions during the rest of it, but I'm also having a few laughs here and there. You know, and it's not just because I like the sound of my own voice. This is verifiable. There have been many, many people who have commented on this. Fastest 2 hours in talk radio. Seriously, by the end of listening to all of this stuff, no matter how scary it is, you actually feel better about it. Because not only do you know how to laugh at it, because it's really scary information at the end of the day, but you get to hear more of it tomorrow. And again and again. And you will have a geometric growth in your knowledge of the world because you're not having that pressure and strain put on you. Now, this might be ironic considering the pressure and strain that it puts me under, but at the end of the day, name me one host who really does a comedy show at the end of the day, kind of like me, but talks about all of the scary, profoundly amazing stuff. Nobody really comes to mind. There's a few variants, you know, like a Jon Stewart, like comedian-esque type thing. Maybe Lewis Black, who talks a little bit about politics. Maybe some Bill Hicks. But at the end of the day, we're not talking about long-form interviews where you actually get really informed at the end of it. That's the problem, is that they've turned comedy into a way of summarizing facts for you and having it be almost informationless. You know, I consider this show a form of infotainment. I surely do. Because it actually informs you. And it actually entertains you. At least I hope so. At least I think so. Okay, maybe it doesn't, but at the end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, I do need support so that I can simply continue to offer this service. And if you've never been... if you have trouble about people listening to you, that kind of thing. Like we all do. Because they call us crazy. Or they tell us that they hate us. Or tell us that we've got other agendas or other stuff like that in place. If there's that, if you ever get people walking away from you at when you're just having a normal conversation about some conspiracy stuff, you know. As you do. Yeah. You ever felt like you're the sane one and everybody else is totally freaking nuts? You feel like you hate them for it? You hate them because they don't know what the hell is going on? And you start to get bitter about it? It's because you're not listening to the Vinnie Eastwood show. You know? You're not learning to laugh about it. You really got to figure out how to let some of this stuff go. It's a service that I give freely. It's not an offer or anything. It's already on the table. You can take it or leave it. Believe me, you will hear something on this show that you don't agree with. Might come out of my mouth, might come out of the mouth of the guest or anything like that. But if you turn the show off then, all you're doing is proving that you judge people based upon one leaf of their tree. One leaf that makes up an entire tree. Judge them based on that. Ah, it's got necrosis, whole tree's dead now. Doesn't work like that, ladies and gentlemen. If you disagree with somebody on a certain point, do what Penny Bright does, long-time activist. You've got to come together on the points that you agree. You know, issue by issue. Otherwise, you wind up alienating everybody. And you know what happens when you alienate everybody? You get alienated by everybody, you nitwit. It's like the very reason that you're coming into this and like accusing everybody of being this, that, or the other. It's the very reason why people don't like you. Because you're accusing them of things that you actually got no evidence for. When you do have evidence, on the other hand, people don't just not like you and switch off. Some people will love you. Others will hate you and endeavor to destroy you. And they will usually be people you thought you could count on. People you can trust. People you thought make a living out of telling the truth. Happens everywhere I'm looking now, ladies and gentlemen. This amplification device we call the internet has allowed everybody, including myself, to inflate their egos to the point of bursting. And some of them have already burst, and they're simply fountaining out this frickin' egomaniac, megalomaniac nonsense. People just don't care about the evidence anymore. They said, oh, I've lived this certain amount of life, and blah, 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 I've seen this kind of thing before, I'm never wrong. Matey potatey, you've got to be freaking kidding me. I'm extraordinarily frustrated. At people's lack of the sense of the possible, I think, as David Icke put it. You know, once you eliminate that, once you say, I'm going to throw possibility out the wind. Like, maybe it's a possibility that I'm a douchebag. Maybe it's a possibility that I'm under mind control. Maybe it's a possibility that what I'm doing is hurting the truth movement or helping the half-truth movement or something of that nature. If you're not even prepared to entertain the possibilities, you just go, no, no, no. Then, bro, you're gonna land yourself in a bit of trouble. I mean, this happens to everybody. If you're not capable of self-analyzing, then I swear you have a dangerous demon to fight. You know, I went through a point where I was vicious as a child. You know, I killed animals, hit my parents, hit my schoolmates, and things of this nature. It was just awful. It's because I was being it. It's what happens. You just get some pain on you, and then you reflect it off. So when you're watching, when you listen to the show, and you're hearing people talk about all this stuff, but they're associating it with laughter and crappy puns or whatever, maybe that'll help you get by. Rather than somebody screaming it at you and telling you to be afraid of it and telling you to wake everybody else up and things of that nature. Because that will get you the rejection that everybody in sales feels when people ain't buying what you're selling, when they think that you're crazy, when they tell you to F off or something of that nature, when you're trying to be genuine, when you're trying to help them, and then you start to hate them. Because you're doing the right thing, and you foolishly think that people appreciate those who do the right thing and tell the truth. The unbridled, uncomfortable truth versus the bold and comforting lie. People will pick the lie nearly every time. So, you will be depressed if you are a truth seeker at times. You will be depressed if you are a truth spreader at times. Not because, oh, you're unhealthy or anything like that. It's because, basically, the evil eye works. Right? And this new study says that if you give somebody the evil eye, you know, when you stare at the back of their head, studies have proven that your body actually reacts to it. There's like a stress hormone, stuff like that. So if you're being criticized, even if you don't read the emails, that stuff's still out there, in my opinion. You know? It's still coming at you. Even if you just see the headline of an email or who it's from, and you know them as somebody who just basically trolls and gives abuse and stuff over YouTube and what have you. Just that name coming up gets this sort of resurgence of anger and rage. We've got to be able to let that go from time to time, just have a bit of a laugh about it, and also, not only just laughing about it, you know, because that's just too vacuous and freaking shallow for my liking, you also need to be really deep about it, like really, really deep. I mean, you should be, if you're uninitiated to the wiles of the world, and most of the audience actually are quite educated, according to the stats and everything, most of them, and they're, I think, nearly twice my age. You know, between around 50 to 60, I think. Oh, no, 40 to 60 is about half the audience for this show. And there's a reason why I can talk quite well to my elders. It's because most of my friends are my elders, you know. And I've learned respect, patience, and sitting there and actually listening to somebody and taking the time to really ask a question of somebody who actually has life experience for which I have not earned the knowledge in the hope that they might freely give me some knowledge that they have learned on their travels, and so that I might benefit geometrically at my young age from knowledge that took them an entire lifetime to accumulate. Okay? you can accumulate that knowledge too. And it's not just your elders that you can learn off. No, 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 no. There's plenty of young people, middle-aged. It doesn't matter the age. What matters are the ideas. I make sure that these people have a platform to share their ideas. Can you support me for doing that? I'll just ask you nicely. I'm going to give you this content for free. I'm not going to back into a corner. I'm not going to threaten you or say that, oh, the show is going to collapse without your support or anything like that. I just really want to ask you an honest question. Is somebody doing this job for you, for humanity, etc., all the other eclectic ripple effects that can actually be done like this, like an activist who's down on their luck who suddenly gets reinvigorated just because there's a show of him, finally. Finally, somebody actually listened to me for a couple of hours and I got to tell a bit of my story and get it off my freaking chest. Kind of like what I'm doing now. Alright? Because is that worth supporting? Is that worth carrying on in perpetuity? Is the idea worth stealing and replicating yourself and go off and do it and not need my help or the help of anyone else to get into talk radio, to start making YouTube videos and really make a difference? Sure, it's nice having big rankings and like the most subscribed YouTube news channel in New Zealand, even more than the mainstream media YouTube channels here, but it's not the reason I'm doing it. The reason I'm doing it is because I need therapy, the activists need therapy, and we're all in this motherfracker together, are we not? That's why I'm asking you to support me, to go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and sign up for a subscription. $5, $10 a month, more or less, if you feel like it. A regular donation, maybe if you're in New Zealand, into the Kiwi Bank account that has the numbers on there. I would really, really appreciate it because it's been... winter's a hard time and there's so many... There's just so many costs and expenses and everything, and my wife's gardening business hasn't been doing very well, and I've had to pay all the bills and everything, you know. I'm an activist talk radio show host, and I've had to pay the rent for two people and the food and everything, and it's been incredibly hard, and I really do need your support, ladies and gentlemen, your constant support. So please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and subscribe today. We'll be right back with our guest, Suzanne Closer. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed my nice angry rants and whatnot. And now, the person who had to sit through all that without saying a word, the wonderful, the magnanimous, the somewhat symposious Suzanne Posel. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I was thinking that would be a great marketing gimmick, don't you think? You know, if you hold symposiums, you know, Posel symposiums. I suppose it'd be a good idea, you know.
I suppose it would be.
You could approach someone, make a proposal, you know, and convince them that you're professional.
Supposedly.
Allegedly.
Okay.
So she's from the usindependent.com, the most credible independent alternative news jacket in the country. Which means it's obviously not the number one, because let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, lies are a hell of a lot more attractive than the truth. But it doesn't mean that there isn't a large section of society out there who are actually prefer truth over lies and have realized over time to have the discernment to know the difference. And this is why I like Suzanne Posel.
Thank you. I hope so. I keep trying.
Yeah. Well, someone with the discernment to know the difference often does.
It's out there for you to read. That's all I can do.
Allegedly. Unless it's blocked.
Unless it's blocked, which so far, so good. Let's keep our fingers crossed.
All right. Thank you, Department of Defense personnel, whoever you are, that has overlooked this grievous error.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You know, we can appreciate the incompetence of the military and the police state apparatus once in a while. You know, one time they get something to slip through, it's nice.
Right. Yeah, they're drinking fluoride and eating fast food. So
you can't expect them to be up with the play, so to speak.
No, they're...
I mean, I just censor the stuff. I don't read it.
Right, like super mods on YouTube.
Super mods?
You've never heard of super mods?
Well, I've heard of super, I've heard of mods, I've heard of Superman, and in Jamaica they call them Supermon, but I've never heard of a super mod.
Super moderators on YouTube. And these are people who go around and check for copywritten content, inappropriate content. They can shut down your YouTube channel. They can shut down an individual video. It's kind of nice.
They're like the sheriff of YouTube.
Yes, they are. They're moseying around on their horse, looking around for trouble. And whatever they decide, I don't know what it takes, like what qualifications there are to be a supermod. I haven't looked into it. What is interesting is...
I'd love to be a supermod. There'd be plenty of channels of terrible scum that I'd block and destroy.
Well, you know, there's at least one member of alternative media that is a supermod. I won't name any names.
Oh, come on. You can't give us a lead like that and not name a name. Who in the alternative media is a supermod?
It was interesting. Somebody sent me a video from Alex Jones, and I normally just don't watch it, but I did. It was during when Mark Dice had his YouTube channel taken down, and then he put up another YouTube channel, and that one was also suspended within the same day. And so... this was a Sunday night edition of Alex Jones, and he was talking about how he is a supermod and how he spoke to some of his other supermods in the supermod sphere and got Mark Dice's second YouTube channel reinstated. So that's when I shook my head and I had like a Lewis Black moment. I was like, oh, what? I have to go see what this is. What? Huh?
Okay. Well, you know, every time it gets to, you get to envelop the picture just a little bit further, and you get to understand that the people who say all the time, I'm here to wake you up, actually aren't really there to wake you up. You might wake up of your own accord, look at other sources and things of that nature, but they're not actually there to wake you up. They're there to keep you tuned in.
Well, I just wrote another article on the CNP. I was it's about the militias. I think I talked about it a little bit when we talked about the Council for National Policy. But I was looking at some articles in the mainstream, you know, just looking for stuff to write about. And I noticed that Bobby Jindal, who is the Louisiana governor, was speaking at a conference. And he was talking about how there was going to be a rebellion, that there was a silent war stirring, and that this rebellion was going to come where the people were going to take over our capital. And this sounded a lot like some of the plot lines from Operation American Spring and what Truckers to Shut Down America, which got renamed The Ride for Constitution, and then they had this whole big side plot.
That got renamed Guerrilla Media Network. Let's not forget the 200,000 likes on the Facebook page that got renamed.
That's true. I don't like to mention names because when I do, all of a sudden my website gets hacked. So my website hasn't been hacked in a while. So I'm trying to keep it that way. So I won't mention any names. You can if you want.
Yeah. I think we can just move on from that. And okay. Go to my YouTube channel. YouTube.com/ Mr. News Guerrilla Media, or just search Vinny Eastwood on YouTube, go to my channel, and if you just run a search for Santilli, it's all you need to do. It'll tell you everything you need to know, and more. And you probably wish you didn't know it, but you'd thank God that you did anyway. Now we can move on.
So Bobby Jindal was at the Faith and Freedom Coalition, and he said, quote, "I can sense right now a rebellion brewing amongst these United States where people are ready for a hostile takeover of Washington, D.C. to preserve the American dream for our children and our grandchildren." Now, that reminded me of when I was talking with you about the CNP, the Council for National Policy. And by the way, a lot of people have been passing that interview around. I've seen it all over Facebook. So thank you guys very much. Please keep sharing that. That is one of the most important interviews that I've ever done in my entire life. And people need to listen to that and really let that sink in, because that is the base. That is the foundation of where all of the information that you're getting is coming from. So I was looking at militias, and I briefly talked about them at the when we were talking about the CNP, but I went into more detail to get out the information of where did they come from. Now, in the United States, every state has the right to form their own militia, independent of the federal government's army, because originally, under a constitutional republic, every state was meant to be like a little country with its own government. And then those little mini countries came together as the United States under America. So they all agreed that they were going to work together under America, the United States of America, but they were themselves sovereign individual countries, basically. This formulation of the new idea of militia is not that I was just talking about. This idea of a force that Bobby Jindal was talking about is the brainchild of CNP member, former Major General John K. Singlab. Ever heard of him?
No, it sounds more malicious than militia.
This goes back to Reagan era, of course, because CNP was created during the Reagan administration. So Singlab assisted in supplying the Contras, this goes back to the Iran-Contra scandal, with armory and militia training during the Reagan administration with the help of White House liaison Oliver North, fellow CNP member, to create a, quote, non-insurgency counter-wave strike with funding from millionaires, who includes H.L. Hunt, who helped create the CNP. He helped put up the money to create the organization, as well as Joseph Kors. If you so drink,
it's kind
Coors
of like
beer.
the David Rockefeller of the CNP kind of thing.
Yes, yeah, he's one of them. And H. Ross Perot, who ran for president many, many years back. So, with the CNP funding, or CNP members funding the Contras, as a side note, I added in my article that their contributions to the Contras was actually a tax deduction. Isn't that interesting? You can fund like the Free Syrian Army, I guess, and you could fund like the opposition in the Ukraine.
Well, that's why they call it the Free Syrian Army, isn't it? It's tax-free.
It's tax-free.
You know, now we can drop chemical weapons on people, and we don't have to pay tax on it. You know, the American
it's
dream.
It's like an incentive.
It's the American dream, you know? Going to other countries, poison the living Shiite Muslim out of them, and depose their democratically elected leaders and destroy their life and style and whole communities and cities burn to the ground, and you actually get money from it. I can't even imagine how that could even happen.
It's sick. I mean, first of all, we shouldn't be paying taxes. It's a collection agency of a private organization, so I don't get it. But anyway, they get to write this off for taxes, for tax deductions. And at the time, in the 1980s, they raised $60 million for weapons, militia training, fatigue, uniforms, and, quote, other necessities. And $60 million in the 1980s was a lot of money. Now it's like nothing. So years later, promoting the militia blueprint visualized by Singlab was Larry Pratt, which is the gentleman that I mentioned. He's the head of the Gun Owners for America, which is huge in alternative circles like Wayne LaPierre and Larry Klayman of Judicial Watch. Wayne LaPierre, head CEO and spokesperson for the NRA. So in Larry Pratt's book, published in 1990, called Armed People Victorious, he talked about his expertise in, quote, citizen defense patrols, which were used in Guatemala and the Philippines, and that there should be a militia movement like those citizen defense patrols fostered in the United States to combat communism. Now, those citizen defense patrols in Guatemala and the Philippines, they were known as death squads because they were these conservative patriot militias, quote-unquote, that walked around South America and just killed people, you know, at whim.
Don't you love marketing? You know? You can just name something completely different and people will go, man, that's really great. Should I investigate into whatever the... Nah, let's just vote for it.
You know, I saw, you know, in my news feed on Facebook, I'll go through and look and see what everybody's talking about. And I saw some website, it was called American Freedom Fighters. And I thought, well, isn't that strange? Because the Contras were called Freedom Fighters. And those guys were created and funded by the CNP. And they were these death squads. So why would you want to call yourself the American Death Squads?
Well, obviously they wanted to be kind of like the Contras, but more American. They wanted to be contradictory. I mean, what can I say?
So Larry Pratt was involved in the publication of a guidebook that is used for U.S. militias known as the Field Manual for the Free Militia, which details how to prepare new recruits for the, quote, underground war. Now, here's where it gets a little gummy, a little sticky. Oath Keepers. Oath Keepers and Gun Owners for America and Larry Pratt are kind of like, you know, two peas in a pod. They're really close. Oath Keepers looks a lot like what Singlab and even Larry Pratt were talking about with creating these death squads, or if you'd rather citizen defense patrols, where they Oath Keepers and Gun Owners of America working together to promote militia membership and to foster this formidable force that would be necessary to foster a patriot rebellion similar to what Jindal was speaking about when he spoke at the Faith and Freedom Coalition. Which, by the way, the Faith and Freedom Coalition, when I went and looked at like who they are and who their members are, it was like a who's who of CNP. Incredible. And, of course, Bobby Jindal is a member of the CNP as well. So they're just talking to each other about what they're going to do. I mean, the head of it is Ralph Reed, who's a former head of the Christian Coalition and longstanding member of the CNP, as well as members of the Faith and Freedom Coalition are also members of the Conservative Action Project, which, again, is just saturated in the Council for National Policy. So these guys just – they run close together. You just have to look at and see who's hanging out with who. But they're not shy about it. You just have to look at the About Us section of these organizations, or go to the board of directors or the board of trustees, or get into who's actually making decisions for this nonprofit corporation, and you'll see who they're connected to. And with these groups, it's either a direct connection, they are CNP members, or they're connected to a CNP member, which is one degree of separation.
That's about right. That's how you control things. We have a similar organization in New Zealand called what used to be called the Business Roundtable Group. And then it renamed itself as the Committee for Auckland. And you have to pay $10,000 a year to be a member of this club. And you get almost unfettered access to public officials, media people, etc. Who can pay that much to garner that kind of influence?
I can't.
Only mega corporation scumbaggery. That's who.
You know, it's insane what a sizable amount of money can get you.
It can get you pretty much anything you want.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Oath Keepers is important because, folks, they were there in Nevada at the Bundy Ranch and fighting against the BLM. And this is who is going to fight that we were talking about before when we were in the last interview about the CNP. This is the other side of the police state. You know, the blue team has all of the armory and all of the weapons and the LRADs and the scary suits and all of that. And the CNP have their militias. And there's a lot of different militia groups, but Oath Keepers is the biggest. And so even though I knew that I was going to find a direct connection between Oath Keepers and the CNP, I was kind of hoping that I wasn't. Because sometimes when I look into this stuff, I really hope that I'm wrong. I hope that my instincts are incorrect. Because the ramifications of this means that really good people, wonderful, incredibly patriotic veterans, and people who haven't served, who are just really want to go back to a life that they remember for their children and their grandchildren, are being sucked into this fight for their cause, not ours, for their version of the future of our country, not ours.
And just remember, a traitor will sound exactly like your new leader that you love and want to support and want to lay down your life for. The traitor will appear like one of you. The traitor will be above suspicion. So all these people that you place your faith and your hope in and all of these kind of things, you actually really look into them and you find out that behind the scenes are the exact opposite of what they would show everybody that they really are. That's the traitors among us. That's why these kind of broadcasts are so danged important, to ensure that you don't get led astray by these wolves in sheep's clothing.
It is extremely important that when I look at information, now that I'm starting to really understand the CNP, and it's been about a month and a half that I've been looking into this, and I'm still digging into it, and there's more articles to come, folks, because I can't shut up about this. I have to talk about it because very few people have, and it's extremely important. And if they get what they want, we're going to destroy this country for them. I don't want that to happen. Regardless of what happens, I don't want to at least lose the little bit that we have left. I just don't. I don't want my children to live in their world. And since they are taking over every country...
Don't worry, Suzanne. They won't. They'll just get exterminated.
Oh, that's even worse.
So you can now rest at ease. Your children will not live in their world, you know? Isn't the bright side of things so comforting? You know? Is that what people are sitting around doing, Suzanne? They're thinking that, like, they could just sit this one out?
Pretty much.
Are you freaking crazy? I mean, my goodness! You have any idea who these people are? This is the kind of people who have fomented freaking every revolution you've ever freaking heard of. They've murdered more people than freaking cancer. And in fact, that caused a hell of a lot of the cancer. These are people who implant viruses in people's bodies and tell them that it's good for them and then study the results. These are people who dope up politicians with acid and give and stick them in a room with a Playboy model and a two-way mirror so they can film them and blackmail them. These are people who can kill you and have all the police hold off on coming into the scene for about 10 to 15 minutes to ensure the team that they've gotten to kill you gets away, and then pay off all the media to spin it out like it's just some random shooting and pin it on a patsy in broad daylight, despite thousands of contradictory evidence, testimonials, and then maybe kill 100 witnesses after the fact as well to prevent them from testifying otherwise. These are some bad freaking people, and just because they're freaking evil doesn't mean they aren't brilliant. How do you think they've gotten away with it for this long? It's because every time somebody rises up to challenge them, it turns out they're behind it. The best way to prevent a revolution from happening is to control the revolutions and make them happen yourself. They give money to these groups, they influence their policies, and all the well, good-meaning people who don't do an ounce of investigation into these organizations which they are devoting their life's work and their reputations, going on lists and things of that nature, donating money, unbeknownst to you, right at the very top levels, it was planned all along to rob you of your ability to fight against these scum by yourself without needing a group to represent you. That's how brilliant these people are. And now that you know the game, isn't it obvious what you should do? Cease supporting them. Immediately. Of course, do some investigation first to confirm that what we're telling you is the truth. But by all means, don't play into the Armageddon of your country by giving your heart, your soul, and your wallet to the scumbaggery filth that will kill you and everybody you love, and destroy everything that your ancestors have fought for. It'll all be dust and ashes blown in the wind. I don't think it's a good idea, personally. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Suzanne Posel. This is a listener-supported broadcast, by the way, so please go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and subscribe today. Give us a gift of $5 a month. It's very, very nice. It helps to pay all the bills and keep the lights on and the heat burning. And also check out our wonderful sponsors. There's a number of books and Blue Shield and the High Tea Cafe and the most amazing soap in the world from the Gourmet Soap Kitchen and Wagga Wagga as well. They're all on the homepage there. If you want to support the show, support our sponsors as well. I don't really get paid for any of the sales that I get passed on, apart from maybe the Blue Shield, because these people are just really good people, more or less, and they just want to support the show, and I hope that some of you want to support them for doing likewise, you know what I'm saying? We'll be right back.
The pioneers gave up their safety, their comfort, and sometimes their lives to build our new West. They were determined to make the new world strong and free, an example to the world. Some would say that those struggles are all over, that all the horizons have been explored, that all the battles have been won, that there is no longer an American frontier. And we stand today on the edge of a new frontier, the frontier of unknown opportunities and peril. Beyond that frontier are uncharted areas of science and space, unsolved problems of peace and war, unconquered province of ignorance and prejudice. I'm asking each of you to be pioneers towards that new frontier. My call is to the young in heart, regardless of age. Can we carry through in an age where we will witness not only new breakthroughs in weapons of destruction, but also a race for mastery of the sky and the rain, the ocean and the tides, the far side of space, and the inside of men's minds? mankind waits upon our decision. A whole world looks to see what we shall do. And we cannot fail that trust, and we cannot fail to try.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment for today. My very special guest is the magnanimous Suzanne Posel from the usindependent.com. Yeah, it would be nice if everything was independent and not just the US. You know, I'd like to be independent too, but unfortunately I'm completely dependent on you, the listeners. So please go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and subscribe for $5 a day today. I'm always going out there to protest and filming public meetings and what have you, and making sure that people who ordinarily don't have that kind of expertise at hand, and if it was, they couldn't pay for it if they dreamed of it. I do it for them for free because they need it, basically, and nobody else will do it. So the obligation falls to me because I'm the one with the power to change the situation for them. So go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and subscribe to give a $5 gift per month today, just to cover all the costs and make sure that I can keep helping people. My very special guest, as I said before, is Suzanne Posel. Welcome back.
Thank you. I have another article that kind of shocked me. You know about BPA, bisphenol A, and we have a lot of products now that are BPA free because BPA causes, I don't know, migraines, vaginal bleeding, development of breast tissue tumors, blood clots in the legs and lungs, aggravates diabetic conditions, causes kidney or liver failure, chest pain simulating a heart attack, exacerbates allergic reactions, just to name a few.
Sounds like a charmer.
Sounds great, doesn't it? So they...
it's like the Norman Bates of plastic additives.
Right, exactly. So, you know, we've got this BPA-free stuff, and it's actually bisphenol 5, which is called BPS instead of BPA. And this chemical was put in to replace BPA, which would make it BPA-free. However, BPS alters brain development and causes, amongst other things, what we've classified as hyperactivity behavior disorders, like what we call ADHD.
Well, I think there's a lot of elements to that. Basically, what's ADD again? Not being able to concentrate, just in general to a little bit. Well, did it ever occur to anybody that a lot of the things that we get kids to do is actually pretty boring for them because they're kids and they want to play around with stuff? Mm-hmm.
That's true. That really is true.
You know, it's a really good solution to that. You know, your kids wanting to play around with stuff and you want them to do something else, give them freaking cocaine. That's right. That's pretty much speed, crack, whatever you want. Just go to your doctor. They'll prescribe you some medication which does virtually the same thing as those substances. And you give it to your child while their brain's not even fully developed, when their frontal lobe isn't even fully developed. Yeah, that's a good idea, isn't it? And that'll keep them out of trouble.
Sure, because everybody on cocaine and heroin and speed are upstanding citizens, and they never get in trouble.
Well, you know, actually, there's an element of truth to that. Apparently, the elite are really into their heroin and their cocaine and whatnot, and they control all the judges and the justice system. So technically, yeah, they never get in trouble for it.
Okay, so BPS has been termed safe as an alternative to BPA, but according to Deborah Kursich, who is a professor at the University of Calgary in Canada and led the study that I'm quoting from, she said, BPS may be equally as harmful to developing brains as BPA. Society must place increased pressure on decision makers to remove all bisphenol compounds from manufacturing processes. She points out that BPA-free does not mean bisphenol A-free or bisphenol-free. And she points out that this is not understood in society. When we see the marketing, oh, it's BPA-free. Okay, but bisphenol is the problem and all of its variations on the scale. It's just like with parabens. Ever heard of those?
Well,
probably not.
When I put out my garbage, we do have a parabens, but...
Now, these are the kind of things that if you have like facial cleansers or body wash that has those little scrubbing beads in them, you'll also find it in shampoo and conditioner. It's in the Desitin baby cream. Please don't use that when you guys have children. It is in the Johnson & Johnson baby wash and shampoo. It's even in silver nitrate, which many years ago my son was prescribed this by his pediatrician when I was still taking him to the medical pediatrician. We take him to a holistic pediatrician now. But this, when they do biopsies of breast tumors, and by the way, breast tumors and breast cancer is on the rise for men, so don't tune out, guys, just because I'm talking about breast tumors. They find that
Suzanne, you'll find that whenever you mention breasts, more men tune in, so you're covered.
Okay, guys, let's talk about the breasts. The breasts now. Okay, we love the breasts, right?
Just sort of spike in the numbers there, like a big spike too.
Yes, we like the big breasts. Okay, we love them, and we want to keep them healthy, right? Because we want to keep looking at them. We don't want them to go away, like Angelina Jolie allegedly had a double bisectomy. I don't know. I wasn't there, but she looks really good for someone who – and you can't really tell any scars or whatever anyway. So,
well, that's probably because she doesn't go topless.
Probably.
You know, obviously. You know, they do the – the incisions on implants, they go underneath the breast. That's where they put in the sacks of silicone and whatnot. I think they use a different compound now.
Saline.
Yeah. And also there's a great difficulty with the nipples. Sometimes they cut around that and try to sew it back up along the same line as the areola. You see, I know a lot about breast augmentation, as many men do.
Oh, geez. Wait a minute. Have you been... I don't even want to go into that. That's personal. Anyway.
And moving right along.
So let's get back to the parabens and the breasts. So when they do the biopsies of breast tumors, what they find is they are 99% paraben. Ooh, very scary, because parabens are in most of your toiletries. And it's just like with the bisphenol. Bisphenol A, bisphenol S... It is the paraben and all of its different variations that is the problem. This is causing breast cancer. It's not the BRCA1 or the BRCA2 gene. If it were, then places like the National Cancer Institute would not have on their website stating that even if you have this variant or this mutation in your body does not mean that you're going to come down with breast cancer, nor does it mean if anyone in your family has a BRCA1 or BRCA2 gene variation or mutation that you will become subject to it. And here is something incredible. We were watching a movie the other day. It was, it just came out. It's like, you know, Hollywood movie. And they were talking about mastectomy, and this woman just says, well, you know, I just had a double mastectomy just in case because, you know, you never know. So if I get rid of both of them, I don't have to worry about breast cancer. And I did one of those palm slap to the forehead. Like, oh, it's in the movies too. They're conditioning everyone. So there was a study that was done in New York State by the Department of Health, and this was last year, and it was also in conjunction with the Department of the Environmental Health Services and the University of New York in Albany. And they found an alarmingly high amount of parabens in the food that they studied. Now, they randomly went to grocery stores and just started picking food off the shelves, produce, fruits and vegetables, processed foods, meats and cheeses. They just randomly picked out stuff, including juices, soft drinks, seafood, chicken, vegetables, fruits, breads, baked goods, anything. And they discovered that there were deadly high levels of paraben in everything that they looked at. And what shocked them was the fruits and the vegetables. I don't know, and they didn't know in the study. They suggested there needs to be further research into why parabens are showing up in on our produce, on fruits and vegetables. What is it that they're spraying or that they're dosing these fruits and vegetables in that is putting the parabens in them. So you're eating this and ingesting it into your body. And then, you know, or you're washing it into your daughter's hair. And then when she comes to you at 42 and says, "Mom, I have breast cancer," you don't think back to the apple that you gave her from the grocery store or the Johnson & Johnson baby shampoo that you scrubbed into her hair. Just doesn't click and register. But it's these parabens over time, which is cumulative. They register and clump together and create breast cancer. And so it's not the reason. It's the that we're being told. It's not medical. It's not genetic. It's the food. It's the products that we're being sold that have these chemicals in it. And I know that we hear about that all the time. We hear it about it in infinitum. So we become immune to it or numb to it. Oh, yeah, I know. They're spiking the food and the drink. Yeah, it's terrible. No, really. There is and I hate to use the word epidemic because it sounds like an alarmist, but there's a rising amount of people coming down with breast cancer, men and women. And what are we doing that's so different than the generation before us and so much more different, like between night and day difference between two generations? What's so different that I'm doing that my grandmother did? It's because I am eating and drinking and bathing and using chemicals constantly. And so after amount of time, it accumulates in my body and causes disease.
It's like a silent killer. Like, you wouldn't even see it coming. You wouldn't see anybody having any kind of symptoms or anything that you didn't think were out of the ordinary. Oh, I'm just feeling a bit sick today or something like that, you know. Or and most people even don't tell other people about, you know, when they're feeling sick about something. Like, I don't know, if you've discovered you've got a bum tooth, you know, and it's like rotting in the back of your head, do you go around and tell everybody about it? "Hey, I'm Vinny, I've got a bum tooth and it reeks." No, you don't, do you? You suffer in silence. And one day it gets infected and you die from it. That's the kind of thing we're talking about here, isn't it? But except it's not just, you know, a bum tooth that might kill you. It's like flooding the market with as many toxins, chemicals, pathogens, etc. as possible, so that everybody will die of something. But everybody will think it's completely unrelated.
Absolutely, that's what it is. Because they want you to keep buying the products. Because if you buy the products, then you need medical care or medical management. And this starts this whole ball rolling where they squeeze as much money as they can before you die. And then, you know, God forbid, if you don't have a will, then your estate gets sucked up by the state government. Or if you do, then everybody has to fight over everything and pay off your bills that you died without paying. This is a very, very sick, twisted game that they have us living under for an entire existence, you know. And I was talking with my brother earlier, and he's like, "Oh, well, you know, that's just how life is." No, that's how life has been manufactured. Life used to be, you know, before the 1940s, there were no grocery stores in the United States. Not super grocery stores. There was like the general store. What did people do for food? They grew food in their backyard. They lived near a farm, and they bartered and traded, or they worked on the farm and got food. They turned their front lawns into, they had animals on their property. Then all of a sudden, we needed milk delivered to our house, or we needed to travel to go to a superstore and buy already produced products because we didn't want to produce them anymore at our house. And it was just so much more convenient. And we had so much more time, like all the housewives in the 1950s when they had all the new gadgets coming out and you didn't have to wash your clothes with the washboard and hang them up and on the line. You could use this newfangled washer and it will do it, you know, and then you could maybe just hang it on the line or you could get one of these newfangled dryers.
People had no idea about that stuff. Like my uncle told me that his mother, when they first got a refrigerator, she was like afraid of it. And she like put some potatoes on a roasting dish and then put it inside it just to see what it would do, like to see if it might cook her potatoes or something. Because you're so used to, like, the only thing that you open and put something in that involves food is an oven.
People don't understand that with all of that time came Valium. Because housewives had so much time on their hands that they needed something to do and they got depressed. because part of being a nurturer, and I might get some flack for this, but you know what? I'm a housewife. And you know what? I was raised by a feminist. So here I am, coming from a feminist background, being raised by a woman who burned her bras in the 60s. And here I am telling you that there is merit in nurturing and taking care of your home and your family. And if you don't give yourself that purpose, idle hands are the devil's plaything. So here come pharmaceuticals to make you feel good about the fact that you're not fulfilling what you naturally want to do, which is to nurture and take care of your family. It's kind of sick when you think about how everything kind of just falls into place. And then, you know, we have to go to what I noticed recently was lettuce used to be lettuce. Now, in order for lettuce to be lettuce, it has to be organic lettuce. Because if it's not organic, then it's just lettuce, and lettuce is manufactured. It comes out of a laboratory. That's where the seeds come from. So we have to actually label food as it naturally should be in order to identify it as its natural state, because we're so used to unnatural food.
Yeah. Well, I think we're so used to unnatural everything, even unnatural social interaction. You know, how many people have actually, you know, talked in the last week in person to somebody that you've talked to on Facebook? Interesting.
Yeah. I just spoke with my brother on Skype, and I have not seen his face. We video chatted. I have not seen his face in more than 2 years. And I was just enthralled just to see him, because I haven't seen him, and he had a beard, and I haven't seen him in a long time. And I was like, oh, look at you, and look at all this. Look at how much older you – he's 34, so I'm like, look at how much older you are. And I realized while we were talking how 3,000 miles away from my family does a huge number. I'm busy with my life here and my husband and my kids and everything else that I do, and I love what I do. But for 28 years of my life, my whole life was 3,000 miles away, and I haven't been back there in 6 or 7 years, and I haven't seen my brother in close to like 2.5 or 3 years. That's a really long time to be away from the people that you grew up with and you were raised with and who love you and know you better than you know yourself. And I think it does a number on people that we don't live close to our families anymore, that we are separated and we don't think anything of it, but we're sad and depressed and we feel disconnected. And then we have these relationships online that are disconnected because we're not physically with each other. We forget that 90% of our communication is nonverbal. So if I can't see you, I can't see your facial expressions or your body language. I have to go by tone. And most people misunderstand each other, especially in chat. You know, you can completely misunderstand when someone is trying to be funny and they're coming off the wrong way and you're taking them seriously. That misunderstanding would never happen if you were face to face. But we continue to push this.
Unless they're like a hardcore socialist kind of, those people got no sense of humor.
No, there are really trolls that are just really out there to just like make your day really suck. But most of the time people are just trying to make comments and trying to be fun and trying to be part of the conversation, and they're misinterpreted and misunderstood because we're not physically with each other. And a lot of problems stem from the fact that we're pushing more and more of social media, that we don't have to be around each other to be around each other. Yes, we do. We're social creatures. We need to see each other and be around each other. Did you know that cuddling releases such a high level of dopamine that it will literally instantly get rid of depression, feelings of anxiety, feelings of fear, just cuddling. So
I am like the chief cuddle master, you know. I'm 6'4", so if you're like hugging me in public or kind of thing, you got to put your arms around my waist because you can't even reach my shoulders. Then you come in, and I'm big and soft and squishy, and then I put my big arms around you, and then I can put my chin and rest it on your head. So you're like completely encapsulated in a big, warm, squishy hug. It's very, very nice, I'm told.
I'm 5'1". My husband is 6'2".
Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
And another thing about being tall is I've never actually seen myself in my bathroom mirror before, you know. Never seen my face anyway.
Oh, do you have to, like, bend down to get under the shower head?
Yeah.
My husband complains about that all the time.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole bunch of memes about things that happen to tall people. It's basically, the world was not built for our kind.
And cars. My husband gets upset when he gets in the car after I've been driving because I have to pull the seat all the way forward. Otherwise, I can't reach the pedals. I'm like a little kid.
Yeah.
And he has to push it all the way back.
See, here's the thing, all right? Fellas, you do need to leave the toilet seat down. Women, you do need to put the frickin' car seat back.
And please, okay, toilet paper goes over, not under. Okay, so when you put the roll in, the paper comes out over, not under.
Really?
Yes, it does. I'm sorry. Toilet seat down, toilet paper over.
See, I'm more about the toilet paper's functionality. I figure, like, whichever way it comes, you know, front or back or whatever, you know, as long as it gets the business done.
That's true.
You know?
Please,
I mean, let's not get pedantic about it.
No, but yes, yeah. Oh, okay. I'm just thinking about my son. It was a lot of years that he did not use toilet paper, and I'm sure that it's normal for little boys.
Yeah. Nah. Parenting is a messy business.
It really is, folks.
I've seen that there's all these bad sides and everything to that, but at the end of the day, it's kind of what you're here to do. Like, for example, me being a radio show host and all of this kind of stuff, I don't have to do this, you know. I just do it because I'm obligated to. And I think that's what truth is and having children is about as well. You don't really have to have children, but for frack's sake, just have them anyway, bro. Sweet mercy. You have any idea how many idiots there are out there breeding like crazy? Outnumbering us, it'll be idiocracy times 1,000.
That's very true. And really, take some time to take care of your children, not just, you know, their basic needs, like making sure they eat and they get to bed on time, but nurture their minds and their souls and talk to them. They really do have thoughts and feelings. You know, now that my 3-year-old is basically speaking, she's very articulate and she's starting to express her feelings and her sentence structure is, it's so adorable when she asserts herself because she's 3. But I'm starting to realize that when she was an infant, and same thing with my son, you know, they don't talk and they don't really verbalize what they want or what they need. They kind of cry and point at things. And you sometimes may forget that they're human. They have thoughts and feelings. They like things. They don't like things. So really get to know this person, because you're not dealing with a blank slate. When they come here, they have a fully formed personality. It's your job to get to know them and help them be the best version of themselves that they can possibly be. But you can't do that if you don't engage conversation and talk to them and find out how they feel and what they're doing and why they're doing what they're doing and what they think and what they're interested in and why they're interested in it. The same thing you would do if you were trying to get to know someone to become a friend or get into a relationship. You want to get to know this person. You don't want to just look and say, oh, well, I like the package. I have an idea of what they might be. Did you see these pictures on the internet of this guy who is involved in sex trafficking and rape?
And all the women love him?
Oh, my God.
It's funny because, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the segment, but it's funny you should mention that because Sarah was talking about that, my wife, and I said to her, hey, you know, that reminds me of a Bill Hicks sketch that he did about Ted Bundy. He killed like 24 women or something like that. And he says, anybody else see this in the paper? This is absolutely true. The courtroom was filled with women trying to meet him and give him love letters and wedding proposals. And Bill Hicks was very sorry to say that the first thought that occurred to him was, and I'm not getting laid.
It's a really, that says volumes about what's wrong with us.
He said that even Satan himself wouldn't stand a snowball's chance in hell against a woman's ego, you know. He's like, he's Satan. You don't know him like I do. He's the Prince of Darkness. I can change him.
You can't change anyone, ladies. You can't even change yourself.
Yeah. Except if it's into, like, you know, a nice bra or panties or something. I'm moving right along. We now have to wrap up the show. Thank you very much, Suzanne Posel, theusindependent.com. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. Of course, visit the homepage, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, and subscribe today for $5 a month just to support the little broadcast. You can do more or less if you want. But, you know, all the content's free. You know, there's no obligation. You get all the information you want without any obligation to give back anything. Okay? That's the way it really should be. You got to make sure that you help people. Just ask for some help back when you need it. And at the moment, ladies and gentlemen, I really do need it. I do need your help. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you again sometime.